Blog Talk Radio.
Music still not starting.
Yeah, I'm... Oh.
It's really slow. I wonder what's wrong. I think she's drunk. I think that, you know, she's British, and it's like, whatever, 1 o'clock in the morning there, so she's got to be drunk, right?
I guess so. Yeah, I stopped playing, so we'll skip it. But we can edit that out. And anyways, my name is Matt Weston. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. And tonight I'm joined by the biggest, fast, drunkest one of them all. How are you doing tonight, BFD?
I am doing wonderfully. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's nothing I'd rather be doing right now. And BFD, did you know that last week we did not have an episode of Battle Red Radio?
I did know that. I did know that. In fact, Tim texted me several times. He was having withdrawal, and we had to get him to a clinic for a little methadone. So it was a tough night for Tim.
Yeah, I mean for me it was hard for me. I was up in Maine. I didn't have internet service, and now I know exactly how Joe DiMaggio felt when he didn't get hit number 63. But this shouldn't happen again. I'm back home now, and we should be able to have an episode every week for the rest of the year and during the playoffs, and then, you know, sporadic shows like we've done before. But BFD, since we didn't talk last week, is there anything that you just dying to get off your chest when it comes to the Texans-Titans game that we didn't get the chance to, you know, talk about yet?
Yeah, I think there are a couple things we should, you know, possibly bring up. I think one of those things should be who stole Whitney Merciless, and can we keep the one you replaced him with? You know, he had 4 sacks against your baby-eating sister fuckers of Mesopotamia. And he was actually playing against some decentish talent. I mean, overall, it's a pretty crappy team, the Titans' offensive line. But, you know, dude, that's – all of a sudden, Whitney Merciless knows how to play football. And I am shocked. I don't know how to react. I'm a little frightened. I think I need to be held, maybe nuzzled a little bit. But he looks like a pro football player right now.
Yeah, I mean, he has this year, you know, but he's just mostly there to stop the run. He has a great punch off the edge, is able to get separation, especially against tight ends. I mean, he's just too strong for tight ends to block. And he does a good job getting separation, reading and reacting and shedding. What I saw, you know, with him rushing the passers, he beat Taylor Lewan a lot. And they met Mercer's. He's not fast enough to win around the edge. And so as a result, a lot of his pass rushes in with him ripping, but he goes too far upfield to do anything that will affect the quarterback or bull rushing, but he's not strong enough or big enough to have enough momentum to carry that bull rush all the way to the quarterback. It's good whenever the ball is first snapped and, you know, he's setting the edge like that where he just gets that punch and he sits, but he's not, you know, big enough to have that momentum go all the way to the quarterback. And so as a result, a lot of his pass rushes, one versus one, don't end up too well. But the thing I saw against the Titans game was his hands. I mean, he was doing a great job using his hands in pass rushing situations where he wasn't letting Taylor Lewan get his hands on him at all. So Lewan goes to punch. He's taking his, you know, right arm, knocking his whole punch off of him, and then planning going right after the quarterback. And it was awesome to see. And, you know, whenever you don't have the ability to use your speed or your strength, you can still get to the passer, but it takes a lot more skill. And it's a welcome sight to see Merciless actually use some skill when it comes to pass rushing.
Well, and that was a knock on him coming out of school, right? He was very raw, but he was a speed rusher. And what he proved to us is he didn't have the speed in the NFL to be a true speed rusher. So he at some point had to figure out, he had to add a second step to his dance move, because watching him do you know, country line stepping just wasn't going to work any longer. He had to start doing something different.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, anything that gets John Simon off the field, the better. You know, I mean, he was such a bad pass rusher that Rack had, you know, Simon pass rushing on third down versus him on the sideline. They're paying him $7 million to step the edge. It's kind of inexcusable for an outside linebacker. You see that much money to do that. And you can find Kirk Williams for, you know, $3 million who can do just as fine of a job. But, yeah, it was a welcome thing to see. For me, the biggest thing from Sunday's game was that we actually had a Watt-ish game from J.J. Watt. I mean, the entire year has been a drag, but I think one of the worst parts about it is that Watt just hadn't been himself. And, I mean, he abused the Titans' third-round pick, Jeremy Patazzi. And, you know, Patazzi had the same problems against the Dolphins where he just isn't, you know, quick enough at all. and he's turning his shoulders, the outside shoulder, and he got benched against the Dolphins. He got benched against the Texans, and a lot of beats, and he had three sacks. I think at least one forced fumble. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was just so much fun to actually see J.J. Watt play to the level that we're used to seeing.
Yeah, and I'd also like to put a shout out to Zach Mettenberg for having the least amount of pocket presence that we've seen in a game since Ryan Mallett.
Yeah, there's a few of those sacks where Watt's coming from behind. He doesn't step up or anything. He just kind of is back there, a stone statue, waiting, you know, for somebody to get open. And he's back there for 3 seconds or so. And, I mean, Watt was just on fire. You have to know that he's coming over there, and you have to step up or do something to get the ball out quicker. But, you know, he didn't do that at all.
No, he held on to the ball far too long, the entire game. I mean, you know, there's two aspects of that. Number one, we were getting up the field better. It was against a really crappy Titans offensive line, you know, granted, but we were still getting up the field. And number two, Mettenberger doesn't know how to sit in the pocket, and he wasn't getting rid of the ball. So when he had those, you know, three-ish things together, well, that's how we got 7 sacks.
Mm-hmm. And on offense, I mean, I can sum up with 3 simple declarative sentences. The offensive line is still being jumbled around. They can't run the ball. Brian Hoyer is really bad. I guess a 4th declarative sentence. And DeAndre Hopkins is really good. And, I mean, that's about all the analysis you need from, you know, the Texans' 20 points they scored on Sunday.
Last Sunday, just so that we're clear, since we were off this past Sunday. And I agree. You know, Hoyer wasn't as awful as he could have been. But, again, that's probably going to be the worst secondary we're going to face the entire season. I mean, looking up and down, we look at our own team, and we're so critical of the makeup and the talent level of your Houston Texans, but then you play a game against the BESF, and it's like, wow, we could be in a much worse spot. So we play maybe the worst offensive line we'll play and probably the worst secondary we'll play all year.
Yeah, I think the Titans are kind of an interesting team. I probably talked about it 2 weeks ago, but, you know, they put all their resources into their offensive line, and they've already had to rebuild it. You know, they paid Lavitre a lot of money, paid O'Hare a lot of money. They kept both of them. They're paying each of them at least $4 million this year in dead cap space. There are different teams playing fairly well. They lost their center for the year. They have a 6th-round pick starting there. They drafted Luan. He hasn't been great. And then they drafted Warmack, who's, you know, been average, but, you know, they used a number 7 pick on him in that 2011 draft or 2013 draft, and he hasn't been, you know, that lead talent that you're expecting. We take it was the 2nd guard taken that draft. Cooper was taken 1st, but his leg was broken. But anyways, you know, they put all these resources into their offensive line. It hasn't worked, and they've had to rebuild the unit, and the unit's still been bad. And, you know, it has to be frustrating. It's just such a, you know, waste of time and money and effort the past, you know, 5 years for the Titans franchise.
And so you say frustrating, and I say hilarious. So I think it's just a matter of opinion on that.
Yeah. Dribble Logic has a question. He asked, did Romeo Crennel save his job at all by the showing they had against the Titans? Not, you know, against the Titans 2 Sundays ago.
You know, I think if we did install a new DC during the bye week, and I think the answer is, to me, is clearly yes. That was really the opportunity to do so. I think the biggest question comes back to is, who do you replace him with? And we had our BRB mass set to questions, and a lot of us put Mike Vrabel. And the reason I think that a lot of us chose Vrabel is, number one, he's just kind of comes from that New England tradition. He's probably going to be somebody that Bob trusts to a certain extent, though I don't think he's got any experience as a DC. But who else are you going to get? I mean, there's a reason. There are other DCs possibly out there who are sitting at home watching TV on Sundays instead of coaching a team because they suck. So who are you going to go out and get? And so I think that's the biggest question. And the second thing is, you know, is if there is still any sort of loyalty bot for a rack system, then I think that was proven, again, during the bye week by not getting rid of him. It's really, you know, I would love to see Crennel gone. I just don't see a path forward in 2015 without him. I just don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the only idea I came up with was, like what you said, was Vrabel. And just because he seems like a natural fit to, you know, he's coaching outside linebackers. It seems like the defensive coordinator is just the next promotion in line. And, you know, I don't know very much at all about his coaching ability aside from all the yelling he did on Hard Knocks, but there's no, you know, way to tell if he can, you know, game plan and, you know, pick plays at all. And Cronulla's been awful, but at least you know what you have and the defense can be, you know, formed somewhat. And changing him isn't going to make the defense any better at all this year. You know, it's going to, they're 21st in DVOA. I mean, you can see it improving, but, you know, there's still too many holes and all that to think a new defensive coordinator is going to make this thing a top five unit, you know, out of nowhere.
Yep, I agree.
Well, anyways, we're halfway through the season, if you didn't know that. So let's go ahead and sit back, take off our pants, and review the last 8 weeks of the year and hand out some imaginary awards. So
you have pants on?
Yeah, I do. I'm taking them off right now, though, actually. That's why I'm asking this question as you're asking it. I'm going to rip off these basketball shorts. So, BFD, what was your favorite play so far this season?
I have two favorite plays of the season, and they're both extremely cynical. I think with all the kerfuffle around Brian Hoyer and Brian Mallett coming out of training camp, and especially after the Hard Knocks, and seeing the way that whole thing was handled, and Ryan Mallett's meltdown with the alarm clock, you know, in training camp. I think that Brian Hoyer starting the season with an interception on the first play of the game against the Chiefs, first play from line of scrimmage, right there set the tone for the season. I just thought it was such a wonderfully poetic closure to the Brian Hoyer versus Ryan Mallett "quote unquote" battle during training camp. It's kind of the just reward that you get for if those are the two guys you're bringing in to battle for your starting job, then that's what you get. That's your reward. Congratulations. And which of course segues into my second favorite play of the season because it was just such a Texans play with Hoyer's floater against the Colts. Again, to me, that's just you have. You took Hoyer out against the Chiefs and put in Mallett. Mallett gets hurt, takes himself out for play, and you put in Hoyer, and Hoyer loses the game on what I've said is probably the worst throw I've ever seen in my life watching football. Again, you have clusterfucked the situation so badly. You have absolutely earned what you have. You've made the bed. You've earned it. Congratulations, Bob. There you go. Those are my two favorite plays of the season.
Those are both really good. I almost went that route just because, you know, I hate watching these quarterbacks play, and it's just so incredibly frustrating, especially with how this year has played out, that if you have even, you know, adequate quarterback play, like Ryan Fitzpatrick's the quarterback of the Texans this year, you know, they may make the playoffs. But my favorite play was DeAndre Hopkins in that fade route. He ran the left sideline against the Jaguars, where he ran back into the quarterback and then bounced off of him to gain separation on that touchdown. And it was something I'd never seen before. And, you know, when he did that, it pretty much cemented him as a top five wide receiver in the league to me. And that was just, you know, just a great performance he had the entire day. And that was my favorite play so far this year.
See, you're not as old and cynical as I am, so that's why you went that way.
Yeah, maybe we'll change, you know, in the next 10 years or so. But not just yet. There's been some funny ones, but you know, not as hilarious yet for me to, you know, go the negative way. But what was your favorite game so far this year?
I looked at the questions. I totally forgot about that one, so I hadn't looked at it. Matt, by the way, Matt does a great job prepping for these shows. He does an incredible job. My favorite game, I really do think it has to be against the Colts to see the corpse of Matt Hasselbeck come in. He hasn't eaten in 18 days. He's been throwing up on the sideline. He's you know, was declared medically dead 3 hours before game time, and he still
he's older than you are.
Yeah, he's not, but fuck you.
Yeah.
And then he manages to go in and just tear us apart at will. That was, I think, you know, once again, that talks about a couple of things. It's just not having your team prepared on either side of the ball, not really understanding what your opponent's going to do to you. That to me, once again, was just a very Texans game, a 2015 Texans game, because the game, and from a macro level, just really says this is what we stand for as a team in 2015. We're unprepared. Our quarterbacks suck. We can't run the ball. We can't stop anybody through the air. Unless there's Zach Mettenberg. So I think that's my favorite game of the year.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite part of that game still was Andre Johnson, you know, finally having a pretty good game. And it was in Houston. He got those two touchdowns. And he looked old and slow and sad, but it was still beautiful to watch him, you know, put some points on the board against Houston. But my favorite game was actually last week. And I, you know, we're at the point of the year where, you know, we'll talk about playoff implications here in a little bit. But we're already at the point of the season where Houston's 3-5. Yeah, there's some hope of the playoffs, but we all know that this is not a good football team. And so we're already at the point of the season where they're playing meaningless football against other bad teams, and it's just awful, like, that, you know, watching this stuff. But we're Texans fans, and this is what we do. Every year we watch really terrible football, and we've been doing this the last, you know, 13 years. And so every time we get to see a game like, you know, like Texans tied in, for both these teams are terrible, we're halfway through the year, and nothing really matters, is always a lot of fun to me. And so just the aspect, and also, you know, watching a good pass rush and actually seeing J.J. Watt make things happen really made the whole, you know, watching the game on condensed in the airport my favorite game I've watched this year.
Cool.
Now, we are a bunch of haters here at Bell Red Radio. We love to hate. We heart our haters even more than we love to hate as well. But which player on this Texans team do you hate the most?
I love this question. I saw this question. And so for the backdrop, for those of you who don't know, and I think we need to put a little context around it, is that Matt and I especially have taken a beating for being not the most optimistic fans in the world. I think that it has played out that way. It's been really funny because I've seen some comments again lately, you know, talk about, how can you be so down on this team? We just beat the Titans and we're in the playoff hunt. But I think overall the change of the blog has really kind of turned from, this is a team that's going to go, I mean, seriously, we had a lot of people saying we're going to go 13-3, 14-2. And, you know, I felt that was pretty entertaining. So, of course, Matt and I get beat up as a response for saying that we're going to go 6-10 or 7-9. So that's why we're haters. Who do I hate the most? Go ahead.
I was going to say, they put the bars of soap in the pillowcase, you know, during the season previews and stuff we had about us saying that they're going to go 7-9, 6-10, that sort of thing. So I think, yeah, we were just being realistic, but even – I think you're a little too kind for some of the, you know, lashes we received, you know, before the season started, even as it's occurred.
So the constant comments, why is this masthead so negative? The constant. That was great. Anyway, so who do I hate the most as the most hatingest hater that ever hated? I think that my answer would be for 2015, and hopefully we're not going to see him too much more, is Raheem Moore, who was simply embarrassing out on the field. He looked disastrous in the preseason, and he looked equally horrific during his snaps, especially against the Dolphins. He was just a joke line. Raheem Moore is the guy I hate the most. When you're thinking about Eugene Wilson, at least Eugene Wilson would at least get in the way every once in a while. Raheem Moore gets himself out of plays. He couldn't even be a speed bump out there. That's how bad he was. So that's mm-hmm. my hatingest hater that I ever hated.
I can read got benched. He said he was mortified by it. You suck, man. Like, you know you suck. Also, you watch the film. You know, you're terrible back there. And the only reason why he hasn't been embarrassed as much as he is because he's a single high safety, and he's not really asked to do anything at all except be an illusion there that there might be a warm body, could actually make a tackle if somebody breaks anything deep. But I know that was pretty funny. My most hated player this year has been Swole Fork, though. I mean, Ryan Pickett came off the couch last year, and he's been, you know, 10 times better than Will Fork's been this year. He's getting paid $9 million a year this year and next year to just get obliterated by double teams. He doesn't hold any blocks. He gets trounced back. He makes the lives harder for Brian Cushing, who needs all the help he can get. And, you know, whoever's playing inside linebacker, whether it's, you know, Tuggle or Dan, or I can't remember who the guy was who started against Tennessee. Bullock, whatever his name is. I couldn't believe
Max that Bullock. Guy
was, yeah, I can't believe he was starting inside linebacker. But he's just another one on a long list of crappy inside linebackers Houston's used next to Brian Cushing. But anyways, you know, I just hate Vince Wilfork. I hate watching him play, and especially after watching him in Hard Knocks, where you don't see him practice once. You just stand there on the sideline. You know, that was that one scene where Watt's like, hey, you know, Vince, I want to see you go allow this play. He's like, nah, man, I can't do that. So I'm really going to hurt somebody if I do that. So the only thing he's hurt this year is a sandwich. You know, he's just been awful. And, God, I just hate watching him play. Like, every time I watch him, I long for the days of Jarrell Poe. That's how bad Will Fork's been this year.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think the worst thing about when we signed Ed Reed, we knew we were getting the bamboos. I mean, we knew we were getting someone who's washed up. I think most of us had that realistic take on it. When we signed Chris Brown, we're signing what was he, 28 at the time, year old running back. Amon Green, we're signing an ancient running back. So there's expectations there. Vince Wilfork was very productive last year with the Patriots. And here we are, the Houston Texans, for the first time in our 13, 14 years, we have a true zero-tech nose tackle on our team that can gobble up blockers and allow linebackers to make plays. And you said he's getting obliterated in double teams. He's getting obliterated one-on-one. It's just been that bad.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote enough about it. I watched a film on him. All this anger is still bent up. I'll die a bitter old man after watching Wilfork play this year. But what's in your favorite commercial so far this season?
I got to admit, it's one from last season. I think it's from last season. I still giggle at the Terrence Knighton pot roast on the treadmill commercial. I still like that one. Just because Terrence Knighton is, you know, he's considered a pretty bright guy and, you know, very nice guy and that sort of thing. And, you know, he's 350 pounds of love. So that's still my favorite. It's sad.
Yeah. The what I've liked this year is the Arts and Crafts Tony Romo one. I think Romo looks hilarious in the entire commercial, and all those DirecTV ones are pretty good. And also some of the memes that, you know, they've inspired have made them, you know, worth it. But that's mine, and I haven't even had a chance to watch that many commercials because I've been watching with the games on mute at some dirty bar in Virginia and then the condensed game. And so I finally have entered back in the real world with everybody else having watched commercials. So, you know, whenever we watch a team play our entire NFL season, I think part of the joy, as well as just kind of the funny little things that happen, you know, throughout the year. So what was the silliest thing that you've enjoyed the most as you've watched the Texans play this season?
I don't know. To me, it's the – I don't know. Again, enjoy is not the right word. The silliest thing to me was the quarterback battle between Hoyer and Mallett. The mm-hmm. whole thing was handled so poorly. It was just so very, very silly. It's like, you know, something Monty Python would say, that's too far. So that's the one that's been the silliest to me. But it's more from a dead clown sort of silly than from a funny sort of silly.
Mine would say neighborhood. I mean, the Ryan Mallett throw hard. And just watching him throw the ball as hard as he can, you know, receivers running 7 yard, you know, drag routes across the field was just hilarious to me. And he was just over and over again, he gets all mad at the receiver where, you know, he's throwing the ball 70 miles per hour when it doesn't need to be. And it's like watching him play dodgeball where he's trying to get guys out and actually throw, you know, completions. And it would have been the Randy Bullitt missed extra points, but, you know, Rick Smith and Bill Brown had ruined my fun for that. And actually, Bullitt got picked up by the Jets, and so he's going to be kicking again. And we'll see how many more extra points he misses this year.
Yeah, because we got Nick kick it all the way to the 10 Novak now going for us, so that's great.
Who's been your favorite hipster player this year? And what I mean is a guy who's not, you know, a star or whatever, somebody nobody really talks about, but you still enjoy watching. You know, kind of like all that, you know, 1980s British disco you listen to all the time.
I don't have one. I don't. Like, normally every year there's a Mike Rizzell type guy that I just absolutely fall in love with. Brandon Brooks is too well known at this point. You know, I hate all wide receivers outside of Hopkins. So I think this might be the first year I do not have a favorite hipster player.
Yeah, I think the first time I asked this question, my answer was Charlotte Kao, because I really enjoy watching him flip over everything and see him actually play every snap. It was a lot of fun. But this year, you know, I've really had a great time watching Eddie Pleasant play the game of football. You know, he's undersized, but he's still in there playing nickel linebacker. You know, he's small, but he's a great blitzer. He covers tight ends very well, and he's really filling that, you know, hole they've had without having another linebacker who can cover it all. And, you know, he's been a lot of fun to watch on third downs this year and in nickel packages. It's really answer the call of duty that, you know, Cornell has placed him into.
Oh, so you took a sarcastic angle at that one.
No, not at all. who's been your MVP this year?
There's no doubt in my mind. MVP is DeAndre Hopkins. The dude has a silly catching radius. Catches almost everything thrown his way, even when they are just horribly off target. He's clearly the lead guy on the offense from a skill position standpoint. But I think what he just does is he knows that he's facing, he's getting extra love from the defenders, and that he has to catch balls from Brian Hoyer, which means he has to be on his toes to catch just about anything. And you know what? The guy looks great doing it. He's got the snappy clothes to back that up with. So it's got to be DeAndre Hopkins this year.
Yeah, for me, it's Hopkins as well. I don't think the Texans would have scored 1 point this year if he wasn't on this team. I mean, he's the only player on this offense who you could – I mean, that's not true. Obviously, he's the only star player on this offense that this team has. And, you know, he's been the only guy that's been fun at all to watch, really. And so, you know, Watt's been good. He's been mitigated some, and he's still J.J. Watt. But Hopkins has been by far the MVP on this team. Now, as the season progresses, what are you going to be looking out for? What are you going to be watching for, especially for these next 8 weeks?
I know that we're 3-5, and Andrew Luck now has the lacerated kidney. We are deeply in the playoff hunt, which is just absolutely ridiculous to state. And then when you look at it, over the next few games, we could be heading realistically into week 16 and 17 with a 5-9 record and still be in the playoff hunt and still have the chance to win the AFC South. So that to me is silly. It's very silly. So what I'm going to be looking for is what does the defense do to not suck so bad? I have the expectation the offense is going to suck. There's not much we're going to be able to do about it at this point this year. The defense has too much talent to suck this bad, has too much smarts to suck this bad. So that's what I'm going to be looking for is how is this defense going to adjust to the quick-hitting passing game that teams have been running against us for 3 freaking years now that we still don't have a clue that what's coming? How are we going to adjust to the point that we don't have anything in the middle that can help mitigate the run? And how are we going to get – are we just going to drop J.J. Watt in at left end and be done with it, or are we going to move him around again? So those are the things that I'm going to be looking for that – I think of, you know, one question might have been, what's the stupidest thing that the Texans have done in 2015 outside of the quarterback situation? And that's not move J.J. Watt around at all. So if we have eventually got to learn from that mistake, got to learn from it. Anybody can see that's a huge mistake. So are we going to learn or not? I don't know.
Yeah, and we talked about that before, but he's been playing mostly at the 4-eye. And, you know, we love seeing that's a 3 technique because – he has a quicker path to the quarterback playing the 3 technique, and the guards can't put their hands on him. So he's in the small amount of space. He's able to use his swim really well or bull rush and that sort of thing, and he's able to get to the quarterback that much quicker. And, you know, interior pressure is always a lot more difficult to deal with than exterior pressure just because of the length it takes to the quarterback. And the quarterback can't step up or anything. You know, he's right, you know, in the center of it all. But you're talking about the playoff hunt, and Football Outsiders ran some simulations. And after Week 8, there's a 15.6% chance the AFC South champion was going to be 6-10 or worse. But after the Luck injury occurred, that figure's dropped down to 7.8%. But it still is incredible that there was a 15% chance that we're going to see a team that was 6-10 winning the AFC South. For me, though, as the season progresses, I'm just going to be, you know, watching Clowney and seeing how he progresses from here. I mean, we were very, you know, surprised to see he had all that athletic ability just oozing with it. He was able to, you know, come out with all that speed and strength that we didn't think was going to be there after having microfracture knee surgery. And, you know, he's been good. He's been great athletically, but not good as a football player. And so what I'm going to be watching is just how he's able to progress, how is he able to learn the nuances of playing the position, you know, how he learns moves to rush the passer, how he reads the offensive line to make sure he's just not, you know, barraging into the backfield, no idea where he's going. So I'm hoping he turns from a Charmeleon to a Charizard this year and evolves into, you know, this pass rushing freak we thought he was going to be. And that's the biggest thing I'm looking forward to, as you can probably tell, because I've said that like four times. But are there any other awards that you have, any imaginary awards you have for me to answer or anything else you want to talk about?
No, but I just want to build on one point that you made, and that one of the things that you miss, we miss from having J.J. Watt lined up deeper inside is the swim move, right? Is that you're taking the player with the best swim move in the NFL, and you're sticking him outside.
Maybe the history of the game.
I'm sorry?
Maybe in the history of the game.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. It's just ridiculous, and we're sticking him outside. We're negating that strength because of that quote-unquote strategy. It's just, it's so disheartening. It's so disheartening to see such a disconnect between what the talent that we have, the skill sets that we have, and the strategy that the team is putting out on the field. It's very disheartening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll do another one of these at the end of the year. The season review show is one of my favorite ones to do, and it's also a really fun article to write too, where we get to hang up these imaginary awards and see how the whole year progressed. And see how far we've come into another, how we survived another crappy, you know, Houston Texans season. So now I want to talk about the playoffs. And so Andrew Luck's been out for 2 to 6 weeks. He has a lacerated spleen. The thing with the Colts is their last four games are against all AFC South teams. And so right now the Colts are leading the division at 4-5. They're going to have Matt Hasselbeck for a while. They're entering the bye this week. The Titans are 2-6 and the Jags are 2-6. So right now, Football Outsiders playoff odds are Houston's a 14.6% chance, Indy's a 54.8%, Tennessee 8.2%, Jacksonville 22.9%. But when we look at the toughest remaining schedules left, is Houston average opponent has a 7.1% DVOA, which is the sixth toughest. Indy's is negative 8.3%, which is 27th, so you know the fifth easiest. Tennessee's is 5.4%, which is 8th. And the Jacksonville Jaguars actually have the easiest schedule in the NFL at negative 11.7%, which is 32nd. So now that I've set the landscape up for you, BFD, and the, you know, the pictures, almost all the outlines are drawn in the picture, just need to be filled in. Do you think the Texans can make the playoffs this year?
Do I think they can? Yes. I mean, we have not been mathematically eliminated, though, in all rights. In a real division, we should have been already. So we can make the playoffs. God, it's just so weird. It's crazy to think about that we can make the playoffs. And of course, we'll make the playoffs and get absolutely slapped around. But you know, that's a different story. I at this point though, I think that Matt Hasselbeck is a better quarterback than Brian Hoyer. Losing Anderson, the Colts is going to be a big loss. But at least they're going to get Luck back. I bet you Luck's going to be back around week three. Or, you know, the third week in. So, you know, they'll be down for a couple weeks, but they got the easy schedule. They get to play the Titans, the Texans, and the Glitter Kitties, the Colts do. So that's a pretty easy schedule. So I think they've got a lot of things on their side. Altogether, with the altogether, you know, simple schedule that I think the Colts take it, and clearly we're not going to get a wild card at 6-10 or 7-9.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they will. Yeah, I think the main reason why is just the schedule. So they play at Cincinnati this week, and I won't spoil my pick just yet. Then they get the Jets at home. They get New Orleans at home. They go up to Buffalo, and they get New England. And then after that, they play the Colts, Titans, and Jaguars in some order. And, you know, there's all of these next five games they play, they're the worst team by far. And they could lose every single one of these games. And then, even if they are able to win one or two, I just can't see them being the Colts. And I think the Colts will go undefeated in the AFC South again this year. And I mean, like, even though they're mathematically still there, even though this division's awful, I still can't see them making the playoffs. And it's just a lot of fool's gold and just empty, airy optimism that will never come to fruition.
Okay, great. We're in the playoff hunt. What do? I mean, we get another, you know, area 15th pick in the draft. We still can't address quarterback. It leaves us in QB hell.
We all know that so well, though. So I don't even know how I would live outside of it, you know. But I think So I guess my next question for you is, how do you think the AFC South ends up by the time the season's over?
I'll be very honest with you, and I think most people, including myself, are going to think I'm crazy. I think Jacksonville Jaguars have suddenly turned into a team that doesn't suck all that much.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, they are suddenly kind of scary. Blake Bortles is figuring out what the hell is going on. The Allen brothers, Hearns and Robinson, are very good wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Julius Thomas is figuring stuff out. The line's gelling a little bit. They still suck, offensive line. Derek Marks is getting healthy. They're getting some good cornerback play all of a sudden after Hopkins scorched, I can't remember the guy who he sent to the bench.
I think it's Towns.
So they're getting a little bit better. Say that again?
I think his name is Towns, something Towns.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can't remember. But that offense is suddenly scary, and the defense isn't quite so bad. Ish. So I think that's a team right now. I think it's a team today that will beat the Texans, and which is just sad. But I don't know how else to put it. It's they're not so bad.
Mhm. Yeah, I think we'll see Indy first, then Jacksonville, then Houston, then Tennessee. And I've watched a lot of Jacksonville coaches film kind of by accident. I'm writing an article this week on Luke Jokel, and so I watched the Jacksonville offense against Buffalo and against the Jets. And I also watched them earlier this year against Carolina, against Houston. And, Blake Bortles is an NFL quarterback. The one thing that plagues him is he makes, like, one or two just really awful decisions that kind of, you know, throw away the game for him, like that interception he threw in the end zone against Houston right before the half. And he kind of reminds me of Geno Smith in that way where, you know, the things are there, then the – decision-making, the pocket presence, the arm strength, you know, the accuracy can be hit or miss, but he just makes one or two just back-breaking plays that, you know, kill a team. And Geno Smith had the same problem with the Jets. But, Jokel's actually a pretty good left tackle. He's solid. He's not great at all, but he can pass protect, and he can make some one-versus-one blocks. T.J. Yeldon is great this year. I mean, everybody's talking about Devontae Freeman, but Yeldon's the same caliber of running back who just makes up for his offensive line's inability to, you know, run block well. He's been great, like you mentioned before. The Allen brothers have been, you know, awesome, just the way they go up and get the ball. And they're fun, you know, they're a fun offense to watch. And, you know, they like I said earlier, they play the easiest schedule for the rest of the year. And so you could see maybe a world where the Jacksonville Jaguars make a run if they can beat Indy one, you know, at the end of the year, where we could see them in the playoffs. But I see the Texans, you know, finishing probably third now, and, you know, the 5-11, 6-10 range, and all these, you know, playoff talks are just the result of numbers, not this team being any good or having any business at all being there. But that's the end of my soliloquy. I just got excited because I've just been watching the Jaguars so much lately. You know, it's like this weird drug. But is there anything else you want to talk about before we talk about the Cincinnati game?
No, I think I've got a lot of it out of my system.
All right. So on Monday night, the Houston Texans, to show the rest of the world how terrible they are, instead just displaying it for us in the other select parts of the country from 12 o'clock to 3 p.m. Central Time, and they're going to be playing the undefeated Cincinnati Bengals. So if you like the Panthers and the Patriots, the Bengals are also undefeated. And a big reason behind this is Andy Dalton. Last season, his numbers were a DYAR of 237, a DVOA of -3.7%, net yards of 3,284, average pass attempts of 6.5 yards, completion percentage of 64.2%, 19 touchdowns and 17 interceptions. This year, though, he has thrown for 2,226 yards, an average attempt of 8.63. He's completing passes 67.4%. He's thrown 18 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. So have you watched, you know, Dalton all this year? And, you know, if you have, is there a difference you've seen in him last year? And why has he been playing at such a high level this season?
I wonder. They seem to be taking a lot more advantage of Tyler Eifert, especially in the red zone. Eifert's always been skilled, but he's had a hard time staying 100% healthy. And he was also he also struggled to get snaps over Jermaine Gresham. That's the guy I'm looking for. Who, for some inexplicable reason, over a couple of years, you know, was still getting a lot of snaps over Eifert. I think that change alone has really done a lot for the team because Gresham was a net negative in a lot of respects out there. I think that the Bengals also have a pretty darn good offensive line. But when you look at the entirety of their skill positions, the Bengals have really invested in skill positions on that team. They've got Jeremy Hill, Giovanni Bernard, Marvin Jones is healthy. They spent a high pick on Mohamed Sanu, Eifert, and, of course, A.J. Green. So I think what they've done is they've tried to take the pressure off of Dalton and just let his skill guys do the heavy lifting for him, and I think it's been a successful strategy for him so far this year.
And I think, yeah, I agree with all that. And when it looks at Dalton play, I mean, the simple answer is he's throwing less interceptions than he did last year. And he's always had problems whenever you get past rush on him. He can't deal with it very well. He makes inerrant throws. He's not good at throwing defenders in his face. But the thing is that last year they were still top five in adjusted sack rate, and this year they are again. And so it's not like the pass protection has been any better. It was still like it was terrible last year. But I think the biggest reason is, like you touched on with Eifert, being healthy. Last year he broke his elbow in the first week of the year. And so this year he's finally healthy. And with the Bengals, they run a lot of downfield routes. And so you have Dalton constantly looking downfield, and he doesn't have anybody really check down to that well whenever pass pressure is there. And this year he has Eifert, who attacked the shorter part of the field, the middle of the field. And so I think with him, he has great pass pressure, but even when there's a pass rush, he has that blank in the center of the field. He can still complete passes to consistently. So rather than take chances throwing double coverage, throwing at the guy's face, he knows where to go with the ball now. And so I think Eifert, is kind of like the big deal. And also he's a year older now too. He's 28. He's been in the league for 6 years now, I think. And maybe less than that. I think he came out to DC a little bit older. But he's older. He might just be better now. And has learned a lot from the past year. But whatever the reason is, it's probably one of those two things would be the best guess for me as well. Now, like I touched on earlier, like you talked about with the Bengals offensive line, it's a top five unit, and this year they have adjusted sack rate 4%, which is fourth in the league. They've only given them 9 sacks in these 8 games. Now, do you think Houston's going to be able to rush the passer at all on Sunday?
I do think so. Andre Smith is not lived up to his first-round pick billing. He's still out there sweating Crisco. They've had some problem at center with Bodine out there. So the line does have holes. Whitworth is very good. He's going to put up a challenge to whoever's going off against him. But they do have some holes to exploit there. And once again, this goes back to matchups. Are we going to try to exploit those matchups to maximize our return? And that's what I hope. So go after Smith. Go after Bodine. And let's see if we can get to the quarterback. And I think the answer is yes. I think we can.
Mm-hmm. I disagree. I don't think we will. And I think it's just because they haven't had a good pass rush unless they're playing the Tennessee Titans. Watt had a great game last week. Merciless had a great game. But I can't see anybody other than Watt consistently getting the quarterback this week. It's a top five line. They do a great job together. And I just can't see him getting Dalton really at all. But I know last year when they played the Bengals, one of the things, when I was on the show, MDC talked about was the 8-yard cushions that they were giving up to A.J. Green over and over again. And Green just, I think he had like a 10-catch, 120-yard day just by feasting off that. So, BFT, how do you think they're going to cover Green this year? Are we going to see more zone coverage? Are they going to play tighter? Or are we going to see the same 8-yard cushions again?
I think we'll see the same. I mean, there's no reason to think – there's a lot of reason to hope, but there's no reason to think we're going to get back from these huge cushions we're giving receivers on the outside. We've seen it all year. It's really, once again, it's that disconnect on strategy between, hey, we're going to focus on trying to get to the quarterback, but yet we're going to have our cornerbacks play 10 yards off the wide receiver. So that opens up the exploit. So, I say that I think we can get to the quarterback. A lot of that's dependent upon our cornerbacks going to actually play a strategy that jives with that. I doubt it, but I, maybe we'll see every once in a while something will be different, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I see the same sort of thing. I see Green getting deep cushions, and I don't think it's really going to change at all. And I think he's going to have a big game, And I just don't think the pass – I disagree about the pass rush, so I can't see them getting there. I think Dalton's going to have a lot of time to throw. And we also – you know, you talked about tight ends. Houston's terrible at covering tight ends. And, you know, Eifert's been just a monster this year. And so I can't see that being any different at all. Now, whenever – let's talk about Houston whenever they're on offense. I watched the Bengals-Chiefs game, another Bengals game this week. And the Bengals play a lot of zone defense. And they're one of the few teams I've actually watched this year who can actually play zone defense well. They do a good job passing assignments. They do a good job sticking guys in their zone. They're good at making plays on the ball as well. And so that's going to be tough for Brian Hoyer, who's going to have to know where to go with the ball before the snap, know what routes are the best to tip his zone coverage. And the other thing, too, the other part of the defense as well, that's going to be a problem for Houston's offense, is their defensive line. Pecco's huge. Geno Atkins has been healthy. He's been phenomenal this year. And we don't know. Ben Jones hasn't been good this year. We don't know who's going to play left guard. Brand Brooks is still very good. But you still have that huge hole right there at center left guard that Atkins and both and Pecco both play at. And I think they're just going to be in the backfield the entire game. And additionally, you know, what we talked about before, Brian Hoyer, is that he needs to – you have to run for him to throw. And if they're not going to be able to run the ball at all on Sunday – or on Monday night, I should say – and so I can't see Hoyer having a good game at all either because, A, the zone coverage is really good, and, two, they will run the ball. So he's going to be in a lot of third and eight situations and having to throw screen passes to Jay Prosh. But what do you see whenever Houston's on offense?
This would be a really good game to have either, A, a running back that can actually catch the ball in the backfield, or, B, a tight end that doesn't actively swat the ball away as it's in flight toward him. Looking at you, Garrett Graham. This is a game where we should be exploiting. The Bengals have a very solid defensive line. They've got a pretty good defensive secondary. Pac-Man Jones, man, what's up with him? He's playing like he's 10 years younger. So they got a pretty good secondary. But where they really suck is their linebacker core. It's a train wreck. They're terrible. They're slow. They don't tackle well. Dante Perfect hasn't been back. Ray Maluga has never been good.
He's been bad his entire career.
Yeah. So that's the level you really want to attack. And we don't have the tools to do that with our current roster. We just don't. And so I don't see a whole lot of success for the Texans offense against the Bengals.
And Gerbil Logic had a question. He asked if the return of Ryan Griffin and also have an effect on the offense. So I'm guessing that you don't see that happening at all this week.
No, he's crap. You know, he's another unathletic tight end that we're going to throw out there who can't create separate. I mean, that was the whole joke about the signing him to. No, that was Graham. Sorry. But, you know, he's another guy like Graham who does not create separation and can't block. I mean, he's just a guy out on the field.
Yeah, I can't see it happening at all either. I mean, Griffin, it's the same problem with all three of the guys. They can't block at all. And so you can't keep them on the field on first and second down. And then you can put them out there in obvious passing situations. But what does that show? You know, and they're not quick enough to gain separation. And also, they don't catch enough passes to really have any rhythm. So whenever the ball is actually thrown to them, you see a lot of drops. So BFD, what matchups are you looking forward to on Monday? Whenever you're watching the game on Monday night, listen to John Gruden just berate your ears. What are you going to be watching on the field?
John Gruden, the guy who thinks every player out there is the best at his position. I think that I've got one sad matchup and one happy matchup. The sad matchup is A.J. Green against our secondary. You know, A.J. Green against anybody's secondary is almost unfair, but at least some teams have some talent. A.J. Green is going to tear us apart. I just don't see otherwise. We could put three guys on and it won't do any good. That one's, to me, it's just downright scary. The happy matchup is the way that we've been using J.J. Watt off the left end so much against Andre Smith. I think he's going to give Andre Smith absolute fits. Bad news with that matchup is that Jeremy Hill and Bernard both now know how to actually pick up blitzes and how to block coming out of the backfield. And what teams, we've talked about this on the show before, what teams like to do against Watt now is running backs, tight ends, chipping them before they go out in the routes. And I've noticed that as a theme in the NFL this year. There have been a lot of running back blocks, picking up, chipping those guys that are absolutely, you know, blocks and really taking guys out before the left or before the tackle even has to engage. So we see that trend. I see that very much as a trend in the NFL. And the Bengals are going to use it against Watt in this game. So they're going to have to put on Watt off the end because Andre Smith cannot handle him at all. So that'll be the happy matchup to watch.
Yeah, this will be really good. I mean, whenever I watch Houston's defense, I only watch Watt because everybody else is just bad. But my matchup is Brandon Brooks against Geno Atkins. Atkins is one of the best defensive tackles in the league, and Brooks is one of the most underrated guards. And, you know, I love watching Brandon Brooks play. And so I'm excited to see, you know, him against Atkins in the running game, especially whenever we get some juice blocks with Derek Newton and Brooks against Atkins. And then also in the passing game, it's me, you know, Atkins is a great pass rusher. And guard versus defensive tackle pass rushes are always fun because it's so, you know, physical. The space is so small that they operate in. And so that's going to be the one matchup I'm really excited for on Monday. Do you have any other thoughts on this game before you want to do predictions?
No. Can we draft new linebackers before this game? I guess that's my thought.
No, we gotta wait until May for that to happen. So last game you picked the Titans to win, and I believe it was 17-16. I picked the Texans to win 31-24, and I almost changed it too. But Houston won, ended up winning 20-6. And so this year I'm 5-3. I'm still bitter about the Indianapolis game, and you're 5-3 as well after incorrectly taking Tennessee. So we're all tied up now. And like we talked about last episode, whoever ends up winning the season series will receive a gift from the other one that's something Texans related. So who do you have in this game on Monday night?
This one to me is pretty easy. We're playing a team that's on fire at home with horrific matchups almost across the board. I think this one's going to be the Bengals all the way. I think it's going to be a pretty big, high-scoring game for the Bengals. So I'm going to say Bengals 34, Texans 10. Mm-hmm. Now let's make it 9. We gotta get that missed extra point in there at some point. Nick Novak gotta miss an extra point for me. 31-9.
You forgot about the garbage time points that they're going to score. So I'm going 41-24 Cincinnati. And I think Cincinnati goes up like 35-10, 35-7, something like that. And they end up putting up some garbage time points. And I think it's going to be one of those games where John Gruden spends the entire second half just trying to come up with things to say. I think it's an awful matchup for the offense. You know, Cincinnati plays a lot of zone coverage, like I said. They're going to take advantage of Brian Hoyer's awful throws that he seems to make. And then in the run game, they're not going to move the ball at all. And then on the other side of the field, you're going into the top five offensive line and a defense that has trouble rushing the passer. And again, there's no safety play. AJ Green and Sanu are both going to be able to make some plays downfield. And then you have no linebackers who can cover Tyler Eifert. And that's without even talking about Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, who are both, you know, good running backs who can make people miss. And Houston's a terrible tackling team. So I think it's going to be a long one. It's going to be a rough one. It's going to be boring. And you know, you may see a bunch of TVs all across the country being turned off after, you know, an hour, the best that Monday should be. So, again, I'm going 41-24, and you said 31-9 is what you said?
31-9.
All right. Well, is there anything else you want to get off chest at all? Or do you have anything else to talk about?
No, I think I'm good for tonight.
All right. I'll be back. I'm sorry again about last week. You know, I had a chance to, you know, do some traveling. What I do, and I wasn't going to not do it. But I'm back home, though, and every week we should be here at 7 p.m. every Tuesday night. So thank you for listening, and thanks for everyone who asked questions, even though it was only Durable Logic. You know, it happens sometimes. We'll have other things to do in our lives to listen to us, too. And if you like the show, tell all your friends, tell whoever it is, even if you hate them, if you see them wearing a Texans hat, let them know about how great and wonderful the show is. And if you listen to us on iTunes, go ahead and rate and review us as well. Like I said, we're going to be back next week at 7 p.m. on Tuesday. I'm Matt Weston, and thank you for listening to Alvarez Radio. And thanks for coming on again tonight, BFG.
My pleasure. Oh, and shout out to the house on 45th Street over here in The ATX is a house on 45th Street. I saw it flying their Texas flag high. So well done, guys.
we all need help.
Our music playing sucks.
It's crazy.